items. Supplies Bill would never imagine needed to be procured. His hand reached for a bar of soap, a paper clip, a length of toilet paper to wipe his ass. And it was there. Because of her, Babe, concierge extraordinaire. And he never, ever thanked her for it. She began to grind her teeth, even as her mind raced on. Her hair needed to be done by Kenneth tomorrow before the weekend. The Agnellis had had to cancel their visit to Kailuna, so she must find a replacement couple because Bill couldn't stand it if the house was less than full, the weekend less than jam-packed with activities. If he despised anything more than pontificating newsmen and disgruntled advertisers, it was boredom. Which reminded her, she must buy a new pair of tennis shoes because she'd torn her old ones playing softball last weekend. Every Saturday, either the Paleys or the Whitneys, Sister Betsy and her husband Jock, whose weekend home was adjacent to the Paleys in Manhasset, Long Island, hosted a softball game for their combined guests. Softball. Babe wrinkled her nose. She detested the sport. But Bill didn't know. He'd never know, for she played it determinedly. A serene smile on her face, taking care not to get dirt on her pressed dungarees or muss up her makeup, which she had to set with a spritz of water to ensure it would last outside. How she'd torn her tennis shoes, she had no idea, but after the game, as they all sat out on the veranda with tall, cool drinks, Pim's cups, she'd noticed it and quickly excused herself to go change, before Bill or anyone else could see. Truman had immediately followed her, though. He played surprisingly well, fielding balls with a fun-like grace, and Bill had even given him a rare attaboy when he'd hit a home run. But she'd known that Truman had detested playing as much as she had. They'd exchanged looks in the outfield. He'd made such a funny, wry face that she'd laughed out loud. Truman. He'd join them again this weekend. He'd promised, crossing his heart as solemnly as a child. And the realization finally allowed her to relax her limbs. So stiff her joints ached. Her jaw, too, was released so that she was no longer grinding her false teeth. A necessity after that long-ago car accident. Babe shuddered at the memory still. Always. Her hand reached up to trace a line along her jaw, where the skin was just slightly tougher, imperceptibly raised. Her neck began to throb, reminded of how long she'd had to hold it still in that hospital bed, not move a muscle or else. "Don't you want to look as beautiful as before, Babe? Hold still, or you'll scar even more. And we can't have that, can we, dear? Your face is your fortune." Who'd said that? Papa or Mother? It was so long ago. The scars remained, though. Only Babe had ever seen them. And her teeth. Oh, how she hated having false teeth. It was so cruel to be reminded of the inevitability of old age. Teeth in a glass when you're only 19, as she had been. And no matter how much she spent, how many new dentists she saw, the teeth were always the same. They ached incessantly, rubbing against her gums, forcing her to nibble at food. She'd not bitten into an apple since before the accident. She had no choice but to sleep in them, whenever Bill shared her bed. But, of course, he didn't. Not in the most intimate sense, the most coveted, beloved sense. And no one knew this. No one. She was lonely in her own home, in her own bed, in her own skin. And she couldn't tell a soul. "Don't air your dirty laundry outside the family," Mother had said a million times. but Truman. Did he suspect? The way he looked at her, adoringly, but more. Or was it less? Sympathetically. Understandingly. He'd actually taken the time, that first weekend at Kailuna, to write down a reading list for her. Suspecting the truth. That Babe was unfinished. As most decorative objects are, scratch the surface and all you see is a blank piece of porcelain or a canvas. And that she was ashamed of it, deep down.
Just for you, Bobolink. I think you would enjoy these books. A mind, a heart, can't be neglected.
How did he know? They'd not discussed much of anything beyond his childhood. After Bill had come home, and she hadn't been ready for him, the rest of the weekend had passed in a blur of company and arrangements, meals and games and drinks and minor crises, like the mystifying disappearance of one of the game cups for the Parcheesi set. A dress strap of Slim's breaking, requiring a last-minute stitching before Saturday's dinner. She and Truman hadn't had another opportunity for conversation, although she had longed for it the entire weekend. And yet, before he left, he'd presented her with this reading list. Madame Bovary had been underlined twice. His eyes, behind the thick black-framed spectacles he wore while reading, were preternaturally wise and solemn. Studying her as she scanned the list, seeing right through her, the makeup, the clothes she'd picked out so carefully. He didn't notice all that. Didn't care for it, except to admire her artistry. But surface wasn't what mattered, not to Truman. Was it? She wished that it wasn't. She shut her eyes, determined to dream that it wasn't. For Babe longed to confide, her true self, her hopes, her fears, yes, even her imperfections, Odile in middle age, in someone. She yearned for it so desperately that her heart swelled with pent-up fears and frustrations, to the point where she wondered if it could be seen beneath her tailored shirts and couture dresses. This pulsating, swollen, disgusting sack of desire. If the world only knew. Perfect Babe. Full of ugliness on the inside. Teetering on the side of her bed. Unable to sleep. Unloved. Unwanted. Except by Truman. She had known it from the first moment they'd met. On the plane. Someone had arrived. Someone very important to her. How does one know that, before the first hello? It's a heaviness in the air combined with a lightness of step. It's a slowing down of the past and a speeding up of the future. A desire to both giggle and cry. A table for two, not one. But tucked away in the darkest corner of the restaurant, curtains drawn tight about it. The table groaning with enough wine to loosen tongues and hearts. "Don't air your dirty laundry," her mother whispered in her ear one last time, as Babe's mind finally slowed down, welcoming, blanketing, numbing sleep. "But Truman doesn't count," she protested softly. Even in her drowsiness, taking care not to disturb a sleeping Bill. Truman. He might be a friend, I think. And I haven't had a friend in so long. And Babe finally went to sleep. Chapter 6.
Tell me about your first kiss.
A boy in second grade. Babe grinned slyly. He told me I was too pretty not to kiss. So, of course, I let him. Mother sent me to private girls' school after that.
A boy in second grade, Truman said and cackled. Me too. He didn't tell me I was too pretty. He had no idea what I was doing to him. Neither did I. But I saw his lips, his rosy lips, and I simply had to taste them. To see if they tasted like roses or cherries. Something candied. Something sweet. I was hungry for that. For sweetness. In my life.
And did they taste sweet?
No. They were lifeless. Stunned. Flat as old champagne. It was the greatest disappointment of my childhood.
Tell me about your favorite pet as a child. My dog, Bobo. I loved that dog. He was a black poodle. He wasn't supposed to sleep with me, but I always snuck him up when no one was looking. Betsy knew, and once, because I'd borrowed a sweater from her and ruined it, she told Mother. Bobo was banished outdoors after that for good. I guess he ran away, like most dogs do. Babe, whose gaze had been so grave and thoughtful, suddenly smiled. I haven't thought of Bobo in years. We have English bulldogs now. Bill thinks they're very chic. Purebred, of course, kept in heated and air-conditioned kennels. I don't even know all their names. Someone else takes care of them and brings them in once a day to be petted, maybe walked, if I'm about to take some exercise. It's not the same, though, at all. And her eyes widened, as if realizing this for the first time. We have dogs, but we don't have pets.
We had so many animals back in Monroeville. Sook had a fat old bird she kept in a cage in the kitchen. I always had a lizard or two in a shoebox. Cats simply draped themselves about the house, on the porch, the windowsills, the eaves and rain barrels. Most everyone had an old hound dog, just because. That's how the South is. I don't know that I had a favorite, though. I finally persuaded Jack to let me have a dog about a year ago. Now the dog loves Jack more than he loves me. Typical.
Truman laughed, but there was a hollowness to it that made Babe impulsively grasp his hand in sympathy. Why do they always love the one that doesn't love them?
Truman shrugged. Bitches. We're all the same, after all.
Tell me about your guiltiest pleasure.
Sex,
Truman said immediately, his eyes sparkling. His pink tongue darted between his white teeth, and he licked his lips, as if tasting candy on his own flesh. That doesn't count, Babe retorted, squirming slightly, even as she managed to look very prissy. Like the most fabulously dressed Puritan, her Roman nose tilted very high, her fastidiously lipsticked mouth pursed. Truman noticed her discomfort and said nothing for the time being.
All right, then, he drawled. Chocolate milkshakes. I adore chocolate milkshakes with whipped cream and sprinkles.
Babe's eyes widened. I do, too. Ice cream of any kind. Oh, we should go to Bertillon in Paris sometime.
Paris would be too magnifique with you. We could go to the Latin Quarter and see the most divinely decadent shows, and then go backstage and talk to the girls and boys. I love talking to them. They have the most fascinating stories, you know.
Babe frowned. Of course she could never do that. Bill would have a fit. What if someone recognized her and took her picture? What on earth would people say? Oh, but it would be fun, wouldn't it? Although entirely out of the question. Tell me about your most amazing accomplishment.
It's not yet happened.
Truman tilted that stubborn chin, sealed those blue eyes.
But it will. The Pulitzer, of course.
Of course, Babe agreed, thrilled. That her friend, her intimate new friend, would win a Pulitzer Prize. That she should know someone. Be sitting by the side of her pool at Round Hill with him, their bare feet cooling off in the silky water, who was an intellectual, a writer of such stature. How had this happened? No one in her life, save her father, had ever been what you could call an intellectual. Not even Bill, for all that he had accomplished. Bill moved through life like a shark, fueled by sheer instinct. His instincts were sound, miraculous even, but still, one of his most endearing traits was that he was the first to admit he did not have the kind of mind of, say, an Ed Morrow. That was why Bill worshipped Morrow so, had tried to emulate him to the point of wearing the same trench coat and hat London made when they first became friends during the war. But Truman, with his shrewd eyes, his interest in everything, yet an ability to home in on the most intriguing, unusual aspect. His talent for understanding people and what made them tick. His vast knowledge of literature and craft. His precise yet expansive vocabulary. Truman was an intellectual. She was certain of it. An intellectual with a love of gossip and high society and low life, to be sure, but still an intellectual. And he was her friend. Hers, not Bill's. She'd seen him first. My greatest accomplishment? Babe repeated the question. My children, of course.
No, that's bourgeois. No woman should mistake nature for an accomplishment. It's distasteful, this emphasis on reproduction. It's biological, and that is all. Besides, I've never met your children. So how can you be so proud of them?
Babe colored. I am. All mothers are.
Yet you let others care for them? You leave them all week while you're in the city or traveling? And they stay out at Kailuna with their keepers?
It's better that way, Truman. More stability. And there's no room for them in the apartment, you know.
And whose idea was that? To live in such a tiny little space with no room for anybody else?
Bell's? Babe admitted, her throat suddenly tight, unwilling to allow the disloyal words. Bill wanted that. It's close to his office.
What about you?
You don't understand. Bill needs me, and women always go where they're needed. I have to take care of him. I have to make sure he eats well and is entertained, looked after.
Your children need you. They need you to take care of them, even with all the nurses and nannies. Children need their mothers, babe. Oh, honey. That is one thing I do know.
Stop. Babe held up her hand, her breath coming heavily, gearing up for flight. How dare you say these things?
I say these things because I'm your friend.
Truman replied with a shrug that threw off her anger and bewilderment, and with a smile that melted the ice threatening to encase her. And then she knew. With a clarity that echoed some long-forgotten childhood sense of justice, of knowing right from wrong, because it was the simplest thing, because it was true. She knew that he was right, and that he had the right to say this to her, because Truman is your friend. Truman is a real friend, the only one who has ever talked to you like this, the only one who cares enough to tell you the truth. The only one who wants to see past the surface. This moment is important. It is the template for the rest of your life. Don't run away from it. I'm not used to having friends, Babe finally confessed, kicking a foot up so that it broke the surface of the water, like a porpoise. I have acquaintances.
Not anymore, Truman said solemnly. He crooked his little finger and held it out to her. Best friends, Pinky swear.
Babe smiled and crooked her own finger through his. Pinky swear. And her heart,
that swollen sack of regret,
tore, and she felt something slide down her cheek. She swiped away a tear, as astonished to see it as she would have been to see a lizard floating in the clarion blue pool, as blue as Montego Bay itself, just down the lush verdant hill. The air was silky, warm on winter-parched skin. Truman was paler than smoke, while Babe's flesh was tawny, from years spent following the annual migration of her flock. Several long stays each winter in the Caribbean, summers in the country, an annual yachting trip in the Mediterranean, a year spent chasing the sun in golden chariots.
I've never done that before.
Pinky swear, I mean. Not with my sisters, not with my children.
There are a lot of things you've never done before, but that you'll do with me. I just know it. We're good for each other, Bobolink. Perfect, actually. We're so alike.
And Babe, searching the face of her new friend, so brash and confident, yet because he believed in that confidence, touchingly vulnerable, wasn't so sure. And then, suddenly, she was. Because, of course, that was how she'd recognized him in the first place, when he, all 5'4" of him, wrapped in an absurd plaid scarf, his hands nonchalantly in his pockets as he stood in the front of her plane, blinked to adjust his eyesight from the dark outside to the light within. He was exactly like her. Rare and exotic, and yet so completely messy and ordinary. Disgustingly ordinary. So ordinary that great pains must be taken to disguise the fact. To protect the feelings of those who invested so much in exoticism and perfection. How could anyone else but the two of them ever know the cost?
Let's get out of here. Truman stood up, shook his tiny white feet, and helped Babe rise. I want to buy you something. A present. It's only proper. Your hospitality, as advertised, is legendary, and I have to pay you back.
No, Truman, you don't have to. You have already given me more than you can know.
Truman threw his arms about her. Of course you'd say that, but still, isn't there some divinely picturesque market around here? I've heard so much about the colorful Jamaicans. I want to see some. It's exquisite up here on your mountain, but a tad, well, you know.
A tad isolated and exclusive? Babe laughed. Just down the hill from their cottage was Noel Coward's, and up the hill, Oscar Hammerstein sometimes vacationed. Yes, there is a lovely little market down the hill in Montego Bay. I'll drive. It will be fun. I so rarely get to. Babe went inside the luxurious villa, all filmy white curtains and palm fronds and wicker, but weighed down by English antiques,
a nod to the colonial history of the island,
to freshen up. She emerged minutes later in the chicest pink linen sundress, not flouncy, but a cool column. She had on white leather sandals, carried a straw bag, and had subtly adjusted her makeup so that her lipstick now complemented the pink. She'd brushed some kind of iridescent powder on her cheekbones to catch the sun. Truman clapped his hands at the sight of her, causing Bill Paley to look up from a hammock on the veranda and grunt. "Darling Bill, we're just going down to the market for a bit. Would you like me to get you anything?"
"How about some conch? Do we have any of that around?
I like those little conch balls that the cook makes, rolled up and fried in that batter.
I'll make sure you have some for dinner. We'll be back before then.
Babe leaned over to kiss her husband, who said,
"Don't wreck the car,"
before he closed his eyes and resumed his nap. The warning was not unfounded, Truman soon discovered. Babe was a terrible driver. He found himself clutching the dashboard and squeezing his eyes shut as she took the hairpin corners down the mountain to the bay. They roared past palm trees so fast, they were just blurry giants with fuzzy green hats. The dusty road was full of ruts, which launched the car into the air before it landed with a jolt that caused Truman to bite his tongue hard and wince in pain. But Babe was jubilant. She had a fierce grin on her face the whole time, and when she roared to a stop outside a small courtyard in the middle of the town of Montego Bay, a collection of cobbled streets and brightly painted buildings, she brushed her hair out of her eyes, adjusted the Gucci scarf about her throat, threw back her head, and laughed. "My, that was fun."
"I'm glad one of us enjoyed ourselves,"
Truman grimaced, gingerly tested his tongue, and Babe instantly stopped laughing. She whipped off her sunglasses and laid a hand on his arm, her gaze grave, a pucker between her eyes.
"Oh, was my driving terrible? I suppose it was. I don't get to do it very often. Bill doesn't think it's fitting. I'm so, so sorry, Truman. Bill's right. I never should have driven because I scared you. And, oh, that's the last thing in the world I want to do."
"No, no, it was fine. Really, just fine."
But Babe seemed troubled and stayed that way as they strolled through the market. It was small, a cluster of stands made out of wooden crates or palm fronds, piles and piles of the most tempting fruit, bananas and papayas and kumquats and peaches and limes and lemons and oranges, ruby grapefruit, pineapples as big as Truman's head. There were adorable little Jamaican children, their clothes vivid white against their dark skin, dancing around for money. Women in brilliantly colored dresses, turbans on their heads, sat at their stands spreading their wares. There were scarves and straw hats and bags, gauzy cotton dresses in vivid tropical colors, leather sandals. But Babe's mood remained downcast, despite Truman's running narrative.
"Oh, my, I've never seen such fruit, not even down in the village. These little children are simply gorgeous. Look at how graceful the girls are, the way they carry themselves, so tall and proud. Mrs. Freeland would want to collect them all. Do you hear that music? It's Calypso, isn't it? It reminds me of Harry Belafonte, who is divine, by the way. A gentleman and a true artist. I'll introduce you to him."
Then Truman stopped in his tracks. They'd come upon a stall overflowing with colorful paper flowers. Blossoms burst out of baskets, carpeted a small rattan table, were pinned to the grinning vendor, covering her so that she looked like a float in the Tournament of Roses parade.
"Oh, Babe, look!"
Babe did. She smiled, but her eyes were dull with remorse.
"No, I mean really, look."
Truman reached up and grabbed her by the shoulders and marched her right into the middle of the stall, so that they were surrounded by cheerful, vibrant flowers.
"Now, how can you stand here and not be simply awash in happiness? Just try to frown right now. I dare you. Just try it."
And Babe did finally grin. She began to touch all the flowers, picking them up one by one, and then Truman was doing the same. He proceeded to scoop up huge, messy bouquets and pile them into Babe's arms, showering her with the delicate, vivid blossoms. There were paper roses and orchids and tulips and impatiens and begonias and poppies. Reds and purples and oranges and yellows and greens and blues. Babe began to giggle. And then she was glowing with happiness, her cheeks as colorful as the blossoms. They spilled out of her arms, stuck to her shoulders, her skirt, her shoes even.
Voila! You are a work of art, darling.
Oh, Truman!
Babe gasped, her eyes wide, crinkling up in pure pleasure.
Oh, look. Look at this one.
Truman plucked a snow-white rose from her arms.
Do you know what this reminds me of?
Babe shook her head.
When I was a little boy, back in Monroeville, one Christmas we had a parade of all the children. We all had to dress up. Nell and I were stars, twinkling little stars. My cousin Sook made a white jumpsuit, and she fastened pasteboard points on my head, my arms, and legs, the 5 points of a star. She painted them snow white as this flower, and I was so thrilled, because Sook whispered that my mama and papa were going to come see the parade. Oh, babe, you don't know how much that meant to me. I hadn't seen them, you see, in months. Most of the brats in school didn't actually believe I had parents, to tell the truth. So I spent the entire week leading up to the parade telling everyone my parents would be there. Why, they were even bringing a talent scout from Hollywood just to watch me. Or so I told everyone.
Truman studied the flower in his hands, twirling it. Babe stood still, afraid to move. She didn't want to spill any of the flowers. She didn't want to break Truman's spell.
Well, anyway,
Truman continued.
The day of the parade, Sook walked me and Nell to the school where we were supposed to line up. When will they be here? When? I kept asking, and Sook kept shaking her head and saying, Truman, I just don't know. Soon, I hope. Soon. She left me with the teacher, who lined us all up, and then we started walking down Main Street toward the old courthouse. The high school band was playing Christmas songs, and there was a Santa Claus, and ranks of angels, and then, finally, us stars. I didn't really concentrate on what I was doing. I just walked along, searching the sidewalks for any sign of my parents. Finally, I saw Sook and Jenny, the other cousin who cared for me. Jenny was scowling as usual. I never saw that woman smile. But Sook, she just looked so sad. And when she caught my eye, she shook her head, so I knew that my parents weren't coming after all.
Oh, Truman.
Babe, her arms still full of flowers, felt helpless to comfort her friend, who looked so young, so vulnerable, a golden wisp, as he twirled the flower, his blue eyes soft, mired in sad memories. Then he shook his head and looked at Babe. He smiled, brilliantly, a beam as vibrant as the flower he held. He started spinning, his arms outstretched. He whirled about faster and faster.
So, do you know what I did?
He called out, still beaming, his head turned toward the sun, his arms reaching out to the sky.
I twirled. I stuck out my chin and I twirled and twirled. The best, the biggest, the most beautiful star in the whole damn parade. I wasn't going to let those brats see me cry. I wasn't going to let Sook know how devastated I was. I wasn't going to let my parents break me in any way. I was simply going to be the very best.
Truman stopped, stumbling a bit as if he were dizzy, and his breath came in quick bursts.
And do you know what? I was. I was the very best star that day. I had the best time of any of them. And then I went home with Sook, and she made me my favorite cake, a lemon cake. and we ate it together. Every last crumb in the kitchen, when it was still warm from the oven, a little drizzle of bourbon sauce on top. And I didn't think of my parents at all. Not at all.
Truman took that white flower, and gently tiptoeing up, he tucked it into Babe's hair and kissed her on the cheek.
So there. Now you know. Something I've never told anyone before. Something I don't want anyone else to know. A gift to you from me.
Truman, I'm so sorry. Earlier, I mean.
Babe gazed down at the flowers in her arms.
I used to love to drive, you see. I had the cutest little roadster when I met Bill. But then, well, we had a car and a driver, and that was the way it was, befitting our position, naturally. So I'm rusty, and I apologize for scaring you. I'll be more careful going home.
Babe, my darling babe, don't you see? I don't care. I loved seeing you that way, giddy, free, having the time of your life. It was so unlike you, the you that you present to the world. I felt privileged to see that side of you. I was just making a joke. It's such a little thing, my dearest girl. Please forget about it and enjoy yourself and drive like a maniac on the way home. Forget Bill. Forget what's expected of you. Just enjoy yourself. Twirl.
I am enjoying myself now, Babe confided, touchingly shy.
She tried to conceal the sudden flush in her cheeks by burying her head in the flowers.
I know it's silly to be so worried all the time, but I just don't want to disappoint anyone, you see?
You could never disappoint me. Now, I'm buying you all the flowers, the entire stall. Madam?
Truman turned to the woman vendor, who had been watching them this whole time, her mouth open, her lap full of flowers.
All of your wares, please. Pack them up, every last one of them, and allow me to pay.
Oh, thank you, Truman.
Babe dropped the flowers she held into a basket that the woman hastily provided. Then she grasped Truman's hand.
Thank you for everything. For all.
My pleasure, my darling heart.
The two of them hauled basket after basket of bright paper flowers out to the car. Babe drove very carefully back up the mountain, so the flowers wouldn't spill. And that night at dinner, there were flowers everywhere, tumbling out of small baskets, cascading out of vases, a paper flower on every plate. Truman pinned his, a sunny orange poppy, to his lapel, and Babe wore five, clustered together in a corsage on her shoulder. She kept the snow-white rose in her hair. Bill didn't seem to notice any of the flowers, although he did compliment Babe on the conch fritters, wondering why the two of them suddenly started to giggle like schoolchildren when he did.
Tell me, what is your greatest fear?
There was a long silence. No sounds but the low hum of the pool filter, the faraway grazing of a lawnmower, and the determined clip-clip of a gardener on the other side of some tall azalea bushes, trimming away.
That someone will see,
Babe whispered, while at the same time Truman murmured,
that someone will find me out. That no one will love me,
Truman added after another moment, while at the same time Babe admitted,
and that I'll never be loved, truly.
They didn't look at each other. They only sat quietly, kicking at the water. Two pairs of bare feet, vulnerable,
occasionally bumping into each other, tickling, nudging. Two paper flowers reflected in the pool water. Comforting.
Chapter 7. Now, I'm going to be very serious. So listen, please.
Truman banged a butter knife against his champagne flute. The swans fluttered and sighed, turning toward him. Slim rummaged around in her purse for her glasses. Pamela adjusted her cleavage and leaned over her plate toward Truman. CZ burst into giggles. Morella frowned, hoping she would be able to keep up with the conversation. Truman's accent was so foreign to her ears. Gloria smiled one of her Mona Lisa smiles, a secret tickle of the lips, designed and perfected in front of a mirror countless times. Babe adjusted the napkin on her lap and settled back into her chair, turning to her right. Truman grasped her hand beneath the table, giving it a little squeeze. She detected the private twinkle in his eyes, just for her.
Do I have everyone's attention? Good. I would like to announce that we're going to play a little game. That's why I invited you all here, you know. Not just because I wanted to see each and every one of you after my time in the gulag, but because we need to have some real fun.
I heard your time in the gulag was simply divine, and you had caviar and vodka every day, Slim called across the table.
It was, and I did, but that's beside the point. And you can read all about it when the book's published. Oh. Didn't I tell you?
Truman turned coy, tucking his chin into his chest, assuming that breezy, oh, this old thing attitude he always assumed whenever he talked about his work.
Bennett said, when I'm finished with the article, and the writing is going divinely, thank you very much, he's going to bring it out in book form, too. I already have a title. The muses are heard.
Babe led the applause, which Truman grandly allowed. She was thrilled that only to her had he told the whole story. How he'd been so amused by the whole experiment of taking Porgy and Bess to Soviet Russia that he simply had to tag along and write about it. How disappointed the entire company had been when, in fact, they were not served caviar and vodka every day. How absurdly the producers had behaved, believing themselves to be great ambassadors of the arts and not just wealthy dilettantes looking for glory. How curious the Russian audiences had been about the black actors and singers. How they'd asked about lynchings and other things no one really wanted to discuss. How one night, Truman found a bar full of Soviet drag queens, hidden in the basement of a basement of a basement, hidden from the police. And how hideous the men had been. Yet how they'd touched him with their bravery, their tattered dresses so tacky but obviously cherished. Everyone at this table at Le Pavillon was Truman's friend. At times, each could claim he had whispered that she was his very best friend ever. But only Babe knew that for sure. Their friendship was a fact of her life. As she knew, it was a fact of his. The best fact of her life, as she'd recently told her analyst. Who'd nodded and written this down and made no comment, other than, after the session was over, to ask if she could get Truman to autograph a book for him.
Now, ladies!
Truman raised his hands like a conductor. Like a well-rehearsed orchestra, they all turned to him breathless.
Thank you. But that's not why I asked you all to lunch with me today. Lift up your plates and see what's there.
Puzzled, Babe did so, like the rest. This was a surprise then, even to her. And she had a momentary pang of pique. Why hadn't Truman let her in on the joke first? What is it? CZ waved a small, elegant envelope. Sealed. Each exquisitely manicured hand held an identical one.
"Open them,"
Truman cried, a very impish gleam in his eye that Slim at least caught, and that made her hold her breath as she opened her envelope. Inside were four calling cards. Facelift was printed on one card, breasts on another, tummy tuck and nose job were printed on the last two. Everyone tittered nervously, surveying the cards. Slim squinted through her glasses at Truman.
"Trueheart, dear, what deviltry are you up to now?"
"Well," Truman drawled, his eyes still sparkling, "everyone's had it done, haven't they? At least once. One kind of plastic surgery."
Pamela pulled her neckline up. Gloria reached for her bag, ready to manufacture some kind of excuse for leaving. CZ laughed. Slim watched Babe, who had paled, even as she continued to gaze smilingly at Truman. Trusting him, Slim realized. Completely trusting him not to humiliate her or anyone else at this table. Yet Slim could not quite do that. Truman was fun. So much fun. God, who else would show up at Kenneth's while she was getting her hair done with the unpublished memoirs of a Paris gigolo and read them aloud to her in his most resonant voice while she was helplessly trapped by the hairdryer? But there was always a dark undercurrent gurgling at his feet, threatening to suck under those who got too close.
"Now, I'm going to call out a name, and I want you each to hold up the appropriate card. Let's start with something easy. Marilyn Monroe, a darling girl and a dear friend of mine, but oh, what a mess she is. Do you know?"
He lowered his voice to a whisper, "that while she was married to DiMaggio, she was terrified of his mother.
The most beautiful woman in the world, according to some. Not me, though."
And once again, Truman squeezed Babe's hand beneath the table.
"Spending her days in the kitchen trying to make spaghetti sauce just like Mama DiMaggio used to make."
"No," CZ squealed. "No. Are you serious?"
And then she held up her nose job card, and Truman put his finger to his own nose, and they both giggled. They leaned in to hear more gossip about the Hollywood star, whom no one would ever have invited into their homes, but in whom they were all voraciously interested anyway.
"And," Truman drawled, relishing the spotlight,
the beauty of his swans, their glorious heads all turned toward him.
"She really is a mess, the poor girl. An insecure mess. And honey, you wouldn't believe the hygiene. Non-existent, truly. She smells. Marilyn Monroe reeks. That's why none of her leading men can stand her."
"Oh,"
a collective superior gasp. Champagne flutes lifted, jeweled throats exposed. The game continued.
"Mamie Eisenhower,"
and Truman, his face red with merriment, as each and every one had held up breasts. Except for Slim, who called out, "Ike," took a sip of champagne, leaned back in his chair, and sighed contentedly.
"Oh, you are all so gorgeous. I could sit here and look at you forever and ever."
And they knew they were safe from the game, safe from exposure. This wasn't about them, not at all. This was about the others. And so they could play it unreservedly and did. Even Babe, who normally did not stoop to such lows. No one had ever heard Babe Paley say a catty thing about anyone else. And here she was, holding up her facelift card and giggling like a 12-year-old. "Good for her," thought Slim, watching. "She needs something like this, for all that she has to put up with." And in that moment,
Slim decided not to be jealous of the relationship between Truman and Babe after all. She had been. Everyone was. It was the talk of the town. What is going on with the Paleys and Truman? Because Truman was suddenly there, not just in Babe's coveted orbit, but in her Givenchy pocket, her Hermes handbag, her Wedgwood teacup. And Bill Paley, notoriously stingy with his wife's company, even as he had so little regard for it, didn't seem to mind at all. In fact, he welcomed Truman's presence in his wife's life, and seemed to enjoy it in his own. They were a trio, a peculiar little trio made up of the most powerful man in television, the most beautiful woman in New York, and the most darling, fey, and bitchy of all the literary darlings. Truman had his own room at all their homes. He had an open invitation to use the CBS jet. It was known that Bill had given him some advice concerning money and investing. It was whispered that, on more than one occasion, Truman had even managed to coerce Bill Paley into singing Denny Boy around the fire after dinner, and had taken him down to the village one evening to see a drag show. Who was who in this relationship? Was Truman the child, and Bill and Babe the parents? Were Truman and Babe naughty siblings? Were Truman and Babe maybe more? Or was it Bill and Truman? Oh, the possibilities. Slim's head buzzed to think of them. She decided for now only to be happy for her friend, who had never, in all their years of friendship, pounded her fists on the table and laughed as girlishly, as giddily as she was doing right now. And if anyone deserved that, it was Babe Paley. Slim, more than anyone, knew that. Oh, look. Truman did not lower his voice, and Gloria frowned regally in disapproval. But Slim looked, and her pulse quickened. The corners of her mouth began to tickle. Oh, this was good. This was very good indeed. For who was walking in the front door of Le Pavillon but Elsie Woodward and her murderous daughter-in-law, Anne? Can you believe it? Truman's voice finally did drop. Oh, girls, tell me all. I was out of the country when it happened, but you were here. I only heard the barest, driest, dullest of facts. Is it true? Did Anne shoot Billy Woodward in cold blood? Yes, Gloria hissed, shaking her head. She most certainly did. And she claimed it was a prowler, chimed in CZ. She said it was in self-defense, Slim piped up. She claimed it was too dark to see, Pam added throatily. Babe didn't say a word. She merely arched an eyebrow. Oh, someone tell. Tell it all, Truman begged, throwing his napkin down and climbing up on his knees, so that he was bouncing up and down like a little boy. And they all laughed to look at him. Who could resist such an audience? And so, with an imperceptible nod from Babe, Truman's swans fluttered their bejeweled hands, swarmed about him, and began to hiss. The Story of the Murderer and the Martyr. We all remember when Anne started showing up. I don't, said Gloria, because I was still living abroad. Doing what? Asked Slim, with a malicious grin that Truman couldn't help but notice. His ears practically bristled like a cat's. Never mind, said Gloria, waving her hand regally. Anyway, it was during the war. Anne, what was her name then, anyway? Crier? Crower or something like that? It didn't matter. She was from Kansas, so it just didn't matter. Anne was a radio actress. Not bad, either. And a showgirl, of all things. But she started showing up with Bill Woodward, the father, just popping up wherever he was.
"Elsie, the deer."
"Poor Elsie,"
Morella whispered, turned a blind eye as one would imagine. "We all love Elsie."
"Poor Elsie," Gloria murmured.
"Who doesn't? She's truly beloved. She really does take her charity work to heart, her position in society. Well, you know the Woodwards are old money by now. Not back in the days of Mrs. Astor, no. They wouldn't have quite passed muster. Ward McAllister would have run them out of the ballroom." "Well, hell," Slim interjected, stabbing out a cigarette and lighting another. "The old snob would have thrown all of us out, come to think of it."
"Really, Slim," Gloria scolded. "There's no need to be vulgar."
But now, with the banking fortune and that terrific stud farm, the Woodwards are officially old money. "Oh, the farm is terrific," enthused CZ, wrinkling her freckled nose. "Have you been there? It looks like a Red Door spa for horses, manicured lawns and gardens, and the stables so clean and gleaming." Anyway, Bill and Elsie Woodward had the one son, Billy. "Well, Billy is a charmer, but, you know, there were rumors."
"Gay,"
Pamela whispered apologetically to Truman. "There's nothing wrong with that," Truman replied, with just a hint of ice.
"No, no, that's not what I meant. Oh, well."
"Anyway, Billy married Anne, just like that, out of the blue. She was the father's mistress, and then she became the son's bride. Well, Bill, even if he had been the one to fall for whatever charms she had."
"Now, now, Anne is attractive,"
Babe protested, inclining her head toward the corner table where Anne, in black, wan and very blonde and very slender, sat staring into her lap while her mother-in-law removed her gloves and placed them next to her plate. Neither woman seemed to be able to look at the other. "Yes, attractive, sure, if you like 'em cheap and blousy, which she was back then. How much weight do you think she's lost?" Slim mused. "Because I should try it. Although I don't think I want to kill Leland. Yet." There was an uncomfortable silence. Pamela dropped a knife on the floor and bent to retrieve it. The hairs on Truman's neck stood on end like fine-tuned antennae. "Anyway, attractive Anne may have been, but still, a radio actress marrying a Woodward? Bill and Elsie."
"Poor Elsie,"
whispered Pamela. "We're not pleased. But they tried to make the best of it, for Billy's sake, and to stave off any gossip. But gold digger Anne wasn't so happy once she married into the family. She and Billy began to have operatic screaming matches. It was because no one, absolutely no one, would be seen with them. Not even for poor Elsie's sake. Anne was very vulgar, very crass. She simply couldn't be taught, or wouldn't learn. Elsie had to be taken to her room the evening Anne wore red shoes with a blue evening gown at one of her dinner parties. Babe gasped. Truman sighed.
"Tacky, tacky," he said.
"But for some reason, you know, the Duchess of Windsor took a shine to her. Of course, vulgar knows vulgar. The Duchess of Windsor liked Anne, and had Anne and Billy over frequently. In fact, it happened the night of one of their dinner parties. Apparently, Billy and Anne were drunk and tearing into each other, and it got to be so bad that even Wallace asked them to leave. Now, this was out in Oyster Bay, you know, and there had been some talk of prowlers around. Somebody breaking into people's houses, even when they were there. Not even taking much. Just there, in the house, making a mess and then leaving. People were a little jumpy."
"I remember it so well," Gloria whispered. "Billy and Anne weren't the only ones who slept with a gun in the bedroom."
"Yes, but honestly, Gloria, did you sleep with a loaded gun?" asked Slim.
"No, but I did put my jewels in my pillowcase. I didn't get a wink of sleep. It was so lumpy.
Like the princess and the pea, Truman exclaimed, clapping his hands.
Well, even though we all knew